Chris Gibson, you're all over the place. We had a wonderful talk with you the other day about what's going on in Iraq. Now I wanted to talk to you about something a lot more close to home, and that's Lyme disease. You've taken a tremendous interest in that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a public health scourge. Not a day goes by, maybe it's a couple, that I don't have people say to me, I have been ravaged by this disease, or that they have a close friend or a family member that's impacted. And in my view, we need to do so much more. I have brought forward a bill that helps the federal government better organize to bring forward cures and solutions. I think the proximate cause are the guidelines that come out of the Centers for Disease Control, which in my view are very narrow. That impacts diagnosis. While the medical community is divided on whether or not chronic Lyme exists, they all agree that the sooner we diagnose Lyme disease, the better the chances for a full recovery. Well, by impacting the guidelines, changing these guidelines, I think we'll bring forward better diagnostics, better treatment protocols, and better insurance company coverage. And why is that so? When I've pinned down the insurance companies and say, how come you're not paying for more of this? Our people are paying, in some cases, tens of thousands of dollars out of their pocket to get the treatments. And they say, well, you know, if it was approved care, well, then we'd pay for more of it. This is, and that comes out of directly out of the guidelines. So what are we doing about that? Because, you know, I've pressed the CDC separately on this and said, how come you have not updated the guidelines? Your own protocol, your own SOP says you have to update guidelines every 5 years. It's been now 7 years and you haven't updated this. And the response from the CDC is, well, you know, if the science pointed to change, well, then we'd change the guidelines. Well, here's the problem. A system that is set up to be virtuous is non-virtuous. And that is, whenever a new paper comes forward, the decision of whether or not to publish it in a journal, refereed journal, it is sent out anonymously for them to comment. But there are very few people that get to judge these studies. And what we have found is studies that have shown what, in my view, have sound methodology and good approaches and scientific findings that show the existence of chronic Lyme, they don't get published. And so when they don't get published, then the guidelines don't change. And so this is why our bill, what our bill does is, first of all, it requires diverse scientific viewpoints in the verbiage of the law. And then the other piece of this is it forms a working group with federal and non-federal partners. So we're actually going to be able to get our experts onto this working group. And why that's so important is they will then be responsible, because the bill also requires the federal government, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to have a plan and to have a resourcing strategy for that plan to bring forward cures and solutions. The working group's responsibility is to advise the secretary on that. So when we get our advisors onto that panel, we believe that that will impact the requests for proposals, the RFPs that are sent out. And given the government's responsibilities for transparency when government resourcing dollars are sent out, there'll then be a published study.
So let me see if I understand this, Chris Gibson. Are you telling me that there are deniers of chronic Lyme? That I have friends who have chronic Lyme disease. There's no two ways about it.
Yes.
Are you telling me that there are those in the medical community who say there's no such thing?
That's true. They're saying that. And look, what I've said to them is, my people are suffering. You know, and if you can bring forward cures and solutions, you can call it whatever you want.
But what do they think it is?
Well, the best that we've gotten the community to admit to is what's called post-treatment Lyme. So here's the point.
They give everybody a pill, an antibiotic, and they say, okay, eat these pills. And when you're done with that, then anything that happens to you afterwards is post. But I think we know, don't we?
Well,
I think we know that if you don't get cured early enough, then you go into the chronic situation.
Well, we have thousands and thousands of people throughout my 11-county region that are still suffering, and we have to do better. This is why we've brought forward the bill. We believe that having this working group impacting, requiring diverse scientific viewpoints, that these studies will be published. And when they're published, the CDC then will be professionally required to update the guidelines. When we update the guidelines, two things will happen. One is, I think we'll get better treatment protocols. And the second is, we'll get better insurance company coverage. But here's the larger point. We were successful in getting this bill, which is H.R. 789, the Tick-Borne Disease Research Accountability and Transparency Act. We were successful in getting it adopted into the larger H.R. 6, which is 21st Century Cures, a bill that's going to add $13 billion for better research for the federal government to the NIH, the CDC, the FDA, and the focus of which is cancer research, heart disease, Alzheimer's, folks on the spectrum. This is really going to be a very good bill for the American people. And among the maladies that are going to be addressed is tick-borne diseases and chronic Lyme. So this is very important. We were successful in getting it through committee. We expect a floor vote on the floor of the House of Representatives. This is a bill that's been worked with the Senate and with the administration. I'm very hopeful that by the end of the year, the President of the United States will sign an act, the 21st Century Cures Bill, and for those that have been suffering from chronic Lyme, that we would see help on the way.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. Obviously, there are a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats who don't like it, think we're giving up too much. What do you think?
Well, I definitely agree with that sentiment. I have now finally had a chance to read the draft Trans-Pacific Partnership. I have major concerns with regard to agriculture, with regard to workers, the environment, privacy, sovereignty, across the full spectrum. And I certainly don't want to fast-track that agreement. I'm very strenuously opposed to fast-tracking that. I oppose the underlying agreement. And
fast-tracking meaning that the president can do basically what he and
yeah,
his
that's what
want.
This is since 1974. This is Trade Promotion Authority, also known as fast-track. Congress voluntarily restrains themselves. They essentially empower the executive to solely negotiate the treaty and, or in this case, the trade agreement. And in this case, the Congress then will only take an up or down vote. I think that's contra to the founding, which is that we have representatives. They're supposed to give a voice for our people and to debate and take amendment votes on the floor. So all my work since I've been in the Congress has been directed towards empowering the people's voice. I'm certainly not going to go back on that and work to centralize things with regard to fast track. So I voted against that. It was actually one of those cases where I think the good guys actually won one. We have stopped Trade Promotional Authority or fast track. We defeated it this past week. And I feel strongly that we're going to be able to continue to defeat it. And I think that's important because anything that's done with regard to trade should be transparent. Why would they classify this proposed trade agreement? I spent a life in security, as you know, Alan. This is not a matter of secrecy for national security. This should be transparent. This draft should be online. Anyone should be able to read it. They should be able to comment to their representative as to how they feel about that. So by defeating Fast Track, I think we have a better chance of getting any proposal more transparent. And then we have a better chance of making sure we don't make a bad agreement. Because I feel confident this, that if we get a good, if we get a fair trade agreement where we're on a level playing field for our farmers, for our small business owners, for our workers, I like our chances. I think we do really well. What I don't want to see us do is repeat some of the mistakes that we've made, like NAFTA. NAFTA hurt our manufacturing base. Now, you could look at one variable. You could look at gross domestic product and say, well, gross domestic product went up. Well, I think in some ways it's similar to education. Those folks who look for one variable, this onerous high-stakes testing regime, and then try to draw conclusions about the state of excellence in education, I think that's a flawed approach. I also think that looking at one variable on the economy is also a flawed approach. I mean, for example, how self-reliant are we coming out of this proposed trade agreement? I would argue that we're not. I mean, you saw what happened with NAFTA. We had a significant decline in manufacturing. I worry that the Trans-Pacific Partnership could do to agriculture what NAFTA did to manufacturing. So let's slow this thing down. Let's get the American people involved. Let's make sure we don't make a mistake.
Chris Gibson, we love having you here. Thank you again and again and again for coming in and being with us and these very cogent and well-placed remarks. Thank you so much for doing it.
I appreciate the opportunity, Alan, and best wishes to all the listeners out there.